Welcome to the Junk Refund Show, hosted by Alan J. Cook, founder of 1-800-JUNK-REFUND. Have you ever paid those expensive junk removal companies to take away some of your stuff, only to say to yourself, as a truck drives off down the street, some of that stuff wasn't junk? Did they try to sell it for you and give you some money back? No. Well, now there is a company that can do just that. Listen to our weekly Junk Refund Show on BBS Radio TV to learn how one lady spent $375 on junk removal and got $3,200 back. 1-800-JUNK-REFUND represents the next generation of junk removal. Learn how to not only save your money on junk removal, but how to get some money coming back. Plus, purchase one of our radio vouchers during the show to save even more on your junk removal. Let's get the junk out of your home and out of your life. Now, with your host, Alan J. Cook.
Hello, everybody. It is my favorite time of the week, Thursdays at 3. I love how that just rolls off my tongue. It beats the heck out of Thursdays at 4, Thursdays at 5, Thursdays at 3. It's almost poetic. I just love it. And I am coming to you live from where all great radio shows are recorded in history, and that is from the parking lot of Costco in Fairfax, Virginia, across the street from the I-66 transfer station, a.k.a. the dump, which is where I just was. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my day so far, and then I'm going to tell you about my guest who's going to join us here in just a couple of minutes. I have done with my pickup truck today, flying solo, just because of the way the day shaped up, 3 jobs so far. I have hauled away 7 or 8 water heaters that I loaded up at about 6:30 this morning. I did another job in, I don't even remember where right now, in McLean, Virginia, took the water heaters to a scrap metal yard, got $140. Drove to McLean, Virginia, loaded that up, and took some more scrap metal back over to the scrap metal yard, then headed up to Elk Ridge, Maryland, filled up the rest of the truck. Really nice lady up there. Came down to Virginia to dump the truck where I have 2 more jobs to do this afternoon. And in the meantime, I do the world's funnest radio show. Yes, that's right. The Junk Refund Show. So I am literally pulling across the street from the dump to do this show, and I am very excited to tell you about Sue Nias, Sue Billick Nias, who is a good friend of mine, is a professional golfer, has been a collegiate golf coach, I believe at a couple of different universities, and has some unique qualifications as a woman golfer for the different tournaments that she's played in her career. And we are talking all things golf today with a real pro who literally just finished giving a lesson about 3 minutes ago and is going to join us on the air. And then not long after she's done here, she turns around and gives another lesson. She is a very cool person and a great friend of mine and somebody that I am thrilled to have on the show to talk all things golf, because she knows all things golf. If you want to ask her any questions or join us on the show, call in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And like Vic Braden used to say at his tennis colleges around the country, he used to say, "I'll make you famous by Friday." Sue can probably get the hook out of your drive within about 3 minutes from what I know. And I'm just delighted to have her on the show today. So she may be on the line right now. I'm not sure. Don, just let me know when we've got her, and we will start talking all things golf with Sue Nias. All right, buddy. Okay, sounds good. She lives, and we'll talk briefly about this during the show, too. She lives a couple of blocks from one of my 7 sisters out in Orem, Utah. She lives right next to, or maybe even on, the golf course that I grew up playing golf at the Cascade Golf Course in Orem, Utah. I'm going to let her tell you about her career and some of the things that she's done. But I think she may have achieved something in women's golf that's very unique, and I'm going to double-check this with her when she gets on the line. But we're very delighted to have her basically sit down and chat with us in between lessons that she's giving. And she's just a great person on and off the golf course, which is really kind of cool. We'll tell you more about that, and you'll see what I mean when she hops on the line. It's really nice of her to do this on a busy day. So I am here at the Costco parking lot, my back to Costco. I'm facing a bunch of bushes and trees so that I'm not distracted by whoever drives by or whoever comes walking out with a big red shopping cart full of $300 worth of groceries because they came here to shop so they could save money, but that's a different show. And it is like, you know, I'm at the Congressional Country Club of shopping when you're in Costco. And I mentioned Congressional Country Club because that is the most prestigious golf course in the Washington, D.C. area, followed by the Robert Trent Jones course, both of which I've played. The Congressional course hosts the U.S. Open golf tournament about every 10 or 15 years. And a few years ago, they held the women's KPMG, I think it was their PGA event, one of their major tournaments was here, and I went out and watched these ladies crush the ball, and that was exciting as well. So we're talking all things golf, and the point is, golf is one of those ways to get some of the junk out of your life. And in most people's golf games, particularly in their driver, there's a little bit of junk that needs to be worked on or corrected, and Sue might be able to help us all with that as well. I hope you enjoyed last week's show with Love Moore, the 5-year-old lemonade phenom down in Atlanta who has her own business and has a fabulous set of parents. Her dad was on last week, and we talked to him about kind of how he has helped her with this. If you're down in Atlanta, look up Love Moore or Love's Lemonade, and you'll probably find her on the Beltline, a paved-over railroad track, basically, that is kind of the walking area, one of the walking areas in downtown Atlanta. And you'll know you've contacted Love when you see a 5-year-old kid out there on the walkway, great, wearing some sunglasses in the shape of hearts over her eyes and wearing a yellow graduation cap. So anyway, Sue, how are you doing? Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on.
That is a great answer. When you said you're doing fantastic, sometimes people say they're doing really well, and you can tell they're lying through their teeth. They're just making it up. You're not. That was
nope.
Legit. I could tell by the tone in your voice and the way you said it. And I told everybody, I think you just finished a golf lesson, didn't you?
I did, and it was so satisfying and filled my bucket because it helps some people have more joy with their golf.
Wonderful. And your next lesson is like this afternoon, isn't it?
Yes, at 5.
That's amazing. So I have built you up already as like the greatest golfer of all time. Yeah.
Not quite, no.
But I haven't really told him to us because I wanted to get it straight from you, and I wanted to make sure I got the facts straight. So thank you for being on the show. I told everybody I'm out doing junk removal jobs. I've done 3 so far today by myself with a pickup truck, and I just emptied the truck across the street at the Fairfax, Virginia dump, and I am now in the parking lot of Costco for the next hour talking to you about all things golf. Yes, well, I was going to go to Congressional Country Club in Potomac. That would have been the ideal place to do this show from, but I couldn't make it back in time. So I thought, well, if you can't do that, go to Costco. So I'm in Costco parking lot talking to you about all things golf. Will you just tell everybody a little bit about your golf career?
Sure. I am a beneficiary of Title IX, straight up. My high school in Florida was desired to start a girls' golf team because Title IX had been enacted and was going for a few years, and they were short on girls' sport teams. And so they thought they'd start a girls' high school golf team. And so, of course, naturally, they decided to announce it in the boys' PE classes. Because the boys' coach, the boys' PE coach, was he was the golf coach as well. So they announced it in the boys' PE classes, which was great because my brother said, oh, my sister will play. And that's how I started.
And you were how old?
I was 15.
You come from a golfing family?
No, not really. An athletic family, but not golfing.
And tell everybody, just for fun, somebody may not, tell them what Title IX was or is.
Title IX was an educational opportunity bill originally set in place by a senator's wife who wanted to go to law school and wasn't admitted because she was female. Not because she didn't meet the qualifications, but simply because she was female. And so she spoke to her husband, and they created the bill together. And Title IX offers equal opportunity in at the educational setting for both genders, boys and girls, men and women. And so public schools began to add sports for women because that had been enacted.
Something tells me that former Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg had just sat up in her grave and applauded what you just said. She would be all over this.
RBG, she's amazing.
Yeah, she would be all over this. So you started in, I guess at 15, you're in high school. You're a sophomore in high school or something?
I was a ninth grader in high school. Yep, I was in ninth grade, and my brother was a little bit older, and he had the golf coach as his PE coach, and he heard the announcement, and he said that I would play, and he got me there because I couldn't drive either.
That's awesome. Is your brother a golfer?
My brother was a golfer. He's also a heroic firefighter and has passed now. But, he's a golfer. He's all-around athlete.
Are your parents golfers?
My dad was a frustrated golfer. And my mom tried it and liked it for a short time.
That's a good answer. Good for you. Okay, so you played golf in high school. What part of Florida? What city in Florida were you in?
I went to Dunedin High School in Dunedin, Florida, in the middle of Pinellas County on the west coast, about halfway down.
Awesome.
Lived in a town called Oldsmar, which is just west of Tampa.
Great golf weather, right?
It was good golf weather.
Okay, and then you played high school golf, and then I assume you played college golf, am I right?
I did.
And where did you play?
I played at Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah.
Did you get a scholarship there?
I did get a scholarship there.
Well, you must have been really good, given that you only played for, did you say you were a freshman in high school when this was announced?
Yes.
You'd only played competitive golf for maybe 4 years at the high school level. Am I right?
Yes.
You're not one of these, Tiger Woods 5-year-olds on national TV out playing golf on the par 3 course, right?
Nope. But once I played my first match, I was absolutely hooked. And I played pretty much, with the neighborhood kids. We used to play sports. We'd play Kill the Carrier, and we'd play football, and we'd play baseball, and I played everything with them. And I also played, organized sport. I played organized softball and some other basketball, a few other things. But I pretty much dropped all the other things and just took up golf. I got a job at a driving range and club repair shop where I helped repair clubs and picked up golf balls and cleaned the balls and resold them for lessons and practice balls. Never made a dollar. And that
you did it just for lessons
my high
and practice
school life.
Balls.
Yep.
Wow. How often did you take a lesson?
I was kind of on a once a week schedule for quite a while.
How did you do it throughout high school?
I did.
So you worked at the golf course, or the was it a driving range or golf course?
It was just a driving range and club repair shop, because back then we had wooden clubs.
Okay.
And, you know, there was a lot of repairs to be done with grip changes and whipping falling off and that kind of stuff. Ferrules, whipping.
Okay. So that's one thing we have in common. I guess one thing we have in common is we both love golf. We have actually played golf together. We played
one time
out here in Washington, D.C., which was a thrill for me. And we have both worked at a driving range for free in order to get playing privileges.
It's a good thing.
Yes. And I did it out here in order to get free playing privileges at the Montgomery Village Golf Club. So then you play for 4 years in high school. Then you play. How many girls signed up for the initial team?
We had to beg and plead and got 5.
And they didn't have to beg and plead you. You were like all in, it sounds like.
I was all in. And we actually had a player on our team who was playing nationally at the time. So perhaps her parents had something to do with it originally. I don't know. But she was really good at the time. And she was heavily recruited. She was a year older than I and heavily recruited. So she was a star. And I was like, well, I'm going to do what she's doing.
Good for you. Where did she go to play college golf?
She went to Southern Methodist University.
And you went to BYU. Who was your golf coach at BYU?
Gary Howard.
Who I don't know. You know, you probably know Carl Tucker. Do you know Carl Tucker?
Very well. Yes.
Probably much better than I. I went to school with his son, Larry, who was a great athlete. And Carl was the golf coach at BYU. For many years. So you played 4 years of collegiate golf, right?
I did.
All right. And then what did you do in your golf career?
I stayed and got my master's at BYU, and that year I served as an assistant coach for Gary and helped him out. And then I went and played on the European Tour.
Tell me about that. How long did you play on the European Tour?
I was there 5 years, 87 to, I only played one tournament in 92, so maybe 4 years. Maybe that's an exaggeration.
Okay, so go ahead.
The first year I went over was simply a return ticket to London and not a lot of money. And so I knew that if it didn't go well, I could get home, and that's pretty much all I knew.
That's gutsy. That is gutsy.
It was gutsy.
And it is. So you, let's see, 15 plus 4, you're about 19, you start college golf. You're probably 23, 24. You head to Europe. You're single. You're hoping you can get back. I guess you had the return ticket, so you know you're getting back, but you have no clue what's going to happen in the meantime, right?
Exactly. And there's no internet, and a phone call is $1 a minute. So it's tough.
So the calls home were short.
Very short.
Well, and you were there 4 years on the European Tour.
Yes, and the European Tour lasted through the summer. So it would start in March or April and go through early October, and then it would stop.
And then from October to March, I guess you came back to the U.S., right?
And I worked on my PhD while the University of Utah was on quarters. So I'd go for the fall quarter that started in October or early October, and then the spring quarter, the winter quarter, which would go from January to early March, and then I'd go back on tour.
What an amazing life.
That's amazing.
An amazing life. All right, so here's a question for you. And I got to tell you, there last week on the show, I interviewed a 5-year-old lemonade stand entrepreneur in Atlanta who has a business called Love's Lemonade. And I was going to kind of set you up at the beginning of the show and say, look, Sue, I know you're really good with interviews, but you're following a 5-year-old genius, okay? And I'm telling you, you're doing great.
Thanks.
You're doing great. And usually when I'm doing this show, if I'm at home and I'm at a desk, you know, I might have a sheet of paper with 20 questions written on it that I have sent to somebody in advance. And I just kind of check off the questions and go down the list. I don't have anything like that today. I am just so excited to talk to you about golf, and I've thought about a lot of things in my mind, but this is just so much fun to do this. So So as you're in Europe for 4 years, give me the best course you played in Europe that you went to play that course and you went, man, that was choice.
Well, at the time, this is the late 80s, Europe isn't using artificial irrigation. Think about that for a second. They don't have sprinklers. They don't have golf carts. So the conditions were significantly different. If it was wet and rainy, it would just be soggy. If it was dry or they were in a heat spell, it'd be like you're playing on an airport runway. So the conditions changed a lot, and you had to learn how to hit different shots, you know, bounce it up, run it up, hit it in the wind. There was just so much to learn in Europe. One of my favorite courses was a golf course in Cornwall, England, called St. Millian. And it is a Jack Nicklaus design. I thought it was wonderful. I very much enjoyed that. We played a women's British Open there. I loved a couple of the courses that we played in the outskirts of Paris. There was a nice golf course in Faro, Portugal. I enjoyed the courses in Switzerland because they made me feel like I was back home in Utah. And Germany had some great golf courses, too. So golf is a great sport worldwide.
It certainly is. And one of the reasons is because upbeat, cool people like you are in it, and you talk about it, and you get people fired up. So here's what we're going to do. Hang on just for a minute. We're going to take a quick break for about a minute. Then we're going to come back, and I'm going to talk to you some more about your wonderful attitude with golf, and we'll go from there. I'm talking to Sue Nias. Sue Billick Nias, a good friend of mine out in Orem, Utah, who is, I build you as a professional golfer and a golf coach and a golf instructor, and I think all of those are obviously true, right? So
yeah, that works.
That work? Okay.
And a grandma.
So we'll and a grandma. We're going to even talk about that, too, because I know that's one of your top priorities these days, too. So, folks, you're listening to the Junk Refund Show. We're talking all things golf. We'll be back here in about a minute. I'm your host, Alan Cook. It's on bbsradio.com.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Doesn't he have a great voice? That is our producer, Don Newsom, and his twin brother, Doug, who started bbsradio.com and are just growing leaps and bounds. And they have done
great
radio shows.
Voice, they, great message, are, all of it.
Yes, they are twins. And if you talk to one and then you talk to the other, you're going to think that they haven't switched. You're still talking to the first one. I mean, their voices are just identical. All right, so I'm just fascinated by your career. So you go over to Europe. You're in your mid-20s. You played 4 years of competitive golf in Europe. And then what? And you got a master's degree in what?
The master's degree was in educational psychology and health sciences. And then my PhD that I was working on while I was in Europe, but I was only doing two of the three quarters throughout the year, was in sports psychology.
Okay, so see, that opens up a whole new area we could talk about, which we'll get to in a few moments as well. So you play high school golf, you play collegiate golf on scholarship, you go to Europe and you play for 4 years, you get a master's degree and a PhD, and then after you finished playing in Europe, what did you do next?
Started our family.
Now, you married a buddy of mine from that I know.
Yes.
From our service as missionaries for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints when we were 19 and 20. Your husband's name is Steve. He was in the same geographic assignment that I was in, which is out in Missouri. And he is a cyclist. Am I correct? He's an avid cyclist, I believe.
He is avid cyclist, yes.
When he goes out on a bike ride to work out, how long is that bike ride usually? How many miles does he ride?
Yesterday was 32 or 35. Some days is longer. He goes pretty much every other day.
How long does it take him to go 30 miles?
You know, I would say under 2 hours, hour and a half to hour 45.
That guy is one healthy machine, isn't he, when he's doing this like every other day?
He's a great man. I'm very fortunate.
How did you meet him?
We were living in the same apartment complex when we were at BYU, and I was pretty determined I wasn't going to date anyone else. I had just been jilted and thought, that's it. I'm just going to go to Europe and play my golf. And he was so persistent. And he did things that caught my attention, and we wrote to each other the whole first season I was in Europe. We couldn't call because it was too expensive. So I'd write a letter for a week. I'd write a letter for a week. He'd write a letter for a week, and we'd send them on the same day. And then we'd receive the letter, and it's full of great information. And we really got to know each other by mail.
That's a great story. I was going to ask you for an example of his persistence. Can you give me an example of his persistence? One of the things that stands out. You just did with his weekly writing. That's awesome. What else
did he do
that just kind of showed you he was persistent?
He'd say, hey, I want to take you on a date such and such a day. And I say, I'm sorry, I'm too busy. I'm working 3 part-time jobs and trying to finish my master's degree in a year. He'd say, well, I'd really like to take you on that day. And he'd keep asking, and then he'd show up at the door. And
after
the first time in my life, I'd say, well, I guess we're going.
That is good for Steve. Good for him. I think there's a genuine lack of that in the dating world today. And, I got divorced 10 or 11 years ago, and I've been in the dating world for a dozen years again. And I could write a book about just what I've learned, but I just really think, as a general rule, there's a lack of persistence and faith, frankly, on the part of a lot of men who, for whatever reason, think it's not going to work. And so they won't try, or they think they'll get rejected, and they won't give it the Steve Nias try. Like, he did. Good for him.
He did. And then he would do things like he would... If he knew I just needed to rest or, I was at work, he would find my car and wash it.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know,
that's
things
awesome.
Like that. Things like that.
That is
a very
lesson
fortunate
for everybody.
Yep.
At what part of your career here did you guys get married?
Well, we had dated a little bit the year before I left, and we wrote the whole first season. And when I came back home, I didn't have any place to come home to because I was done with my career at BYU. I didn't really live there. I didn't have a place there. My family was in Florida. All my stuff was in a storage unit. And he said, well, why don't you come meet me on the Washington coast where he used to fish for, he was a charter fishing boat captain for salmon in the summertime.
Wow.
So he had me fly there, and we spent 2 or 3 weeks there. And at the end of that 2 or 3 weeks, he proposed.
Great.
So we were married that next winter.
I love this guy. Good for him. What a great story. See, we could take the rest of the show and just talk about that, but we're going to go back to golf because that's what I told everybody we're going to talk about. So now you're married. You've played 4 years in Europe. Now you come back. You have a master's degree and a PhD. And then what did you do?
Then I started teaching school because we needed a steady income and we needed some benefits, health insurance for one. And that was the easiest entry point. And so that's what I did. So I taught at the Waterford School, first, and then I went to the local high school, Hunter High School and Granite School District in West Valley City.
That's very cool. Is the Waterford School the same private school that's there today?
It is.
My sister teaches at that school.
That's neat.
How's that for cool?
That's
okay. Now,
that's
but you've also been a golf. You've been a collegiate golf coach, right?
Right. I was recruited out of Hunter High School to go back and help my coach finish up his last few years, and in if I liked it and if I did a good job, then I would be a candidate to be his replacement.
Now, is this your high school back in Florida?
No, my college, BYU.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay, so he recruits you to come back and help him. So you do that. You're an assistant there for a few years, right?
Right.
And then what happens?
Then he retires and I get the job.
So you're now the head golf coach at a Division I school, your alma mater, right?
Yep.
And you
dream
coach
job.
Golf. See, that's so sweet. So many people, I think I read a statistic once that said 80% of the people in the workforce kind of hate their jobs. And when you find somebody that goes, yep, that was a dream job, that's a home run. Because most people can't say that that's their dream job. It's always fun to talk to somebody who can say that. And it makes you stand out in a positive way. How long were you the collegiate golf coach at BYU?
I was there until 2010.
So how many years?
1998 to 2010, so 12.
12 years. What is among the many highlights as a golf coach at BYU for 12 years? Give me one of your funnest highlights of that 12-year career.
Having our team raise their performance level to qualify to return to the national championship after not doing it for 20 years.
That's brilliant. That's as good as it gets.
It was pretty good.
That is really good. And you're doing it in Provo, Utah, which is not exactly Florida golfing weather. Right.
And the Sun Belt schools have an advantage in recruiting and those kinds of things. I could help persuade you to know why it would be good to go to a not Sun Belt school, but the truth is the recruiting is easier in a Sun Belt school because everybody sees, well, you can play all the time. So
what do you do in Provo, Utah with your team during the winter?
Well, here's the thing. Everybody needs a rest from their passion sometime during the year. And collegiate golfers who are in the Sun Belt area get no rest. They're beating balls hard all year, all 12 months.
Because
they can, and because they're in the Sun Belt, they're expected to. So in the month of November, we work a lot on sports psychology. Or if there's a swing change you need to make, let's make it indoors so your golf performance isn't hindered and you're not so upset about the ball flight not being what you want. You make the swing change and then you work on getting the ball flight back to what you want. But you have 2 or 3 months to do that. I just think there's some advantages to having a small window of downtime. And for a collegiate golfer, that's the only time of year you can have that because there's summer tournaments going on all summer long. And there's no other time to take a little break.
I think that's you know, Stephen Covey, a BYU, you know, icon, would talk about one of his seven habits is to sharpen the saw, right? And what, in other words, stop cutting the wood, sharpen the saw, step back, focus, and then go back to work, right? Does that make sense?
Exactly.
And, I mean, I'm talking to a PhD person here, so of course it makes sense. But I want to talk to you about the psychology of golf because one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, is it more a physical game or a mental game? And is, in your opinion, is it, you know, 70% physical and 30% mental? Or how would you classify the game from a mental versus physical standpoint?
Well, when you're learning the game, there are physical skills and techniques that you have to master. But once you've mastered the fundamentals of the game, the shift to the mental side when you begin to compete makes the mental side percentage grow. I do want to mention that golf is a mindset, growth mindset sport. You're always growing and learning, both physically and mentally. But once you get those fundamentals pretty close to down, understood, and into a routine, then a competition is going to be probably more 70% mental, 30% physical.
That's a great explanation. And your background in psychology with your education and your experience puts you in the driver's seat to make that call on what you think is the best way to go. Quick question about visualization. Tell everybody what visualization is, and then tell me what you think of it.
Well, it's imagining in your mind what the motion or the ball flight or the result is going to look like. And it's a purest level of rehearsal there is. So you can image, and it doesn't mean you see it, because some people don't see it. They can feel it. Some people see it differently from a different perspective. Some people see it from above and to the right. Some people see it out of their own eyes. Some people see it as if there's a camera on them. So there's different ways people see it, and some people can't see it at all, so they just can feel the experience. But it is a rehearsal of sorts, and it can be as pure a rehearsal as you can get.
So it's a mental rehearsal of the, and it's a shot-by-shot thing, isn't it, of the
yes.
shot you're about to hit. You kind of picture it in your mind, and then you step up and basically try to do what you either just felt or saw in your mind that your shot's going to look like. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yes.
And I'm guessing you're a big fan of that approach. Am I right?
Yes. Gets rid of the laundry list of items that you have to do.
That's
you don't
awesome.
Want to have to do anything. You want to feel this, or it looks like this. Or if I'm playing with somebody, I'll say, play to the picture you just saw. Play to the picture. Particularly on a, say you're playing a scramble, a corporate scramble with a bunch of friends, and I think it breaks this much. Well, the funny thing is it could do both. If you play to your picture, you can see the speed the ball is rolling. You can see where it's going to take the break. Play to your picture, and you're much more likely to have a good shot.
That builds a lot of self-confidence, too, doesn't it? Because it's your picture, not somebody else's.
Exactly.
Is that one of your favorite phrases you used as a coach?
That was definitely one of them. Yeah, play to your picture. Stay in the present, not the future or the past. Don't be worried about what you might shoot. Don't be worried about what happened here yesterday. This is now.
What about looking at the leaderboard for these pro golfers? Is that a good idea in general, or?
You know,
you
I think that's an individual.
That
I think it's an individual question. Some people can look at a leaderboard and it can help them, and some people can look at a leaderboard and it can cripple them. So it's a question that each individual needs to know. And when I'd have a student athlete that was in contention for the individual lead before the round started, I would ask them, "Would you like to know where you stand? Or would you not like to know where you stand?" And I'd let them make that decision.
That's a great approach as a coach, yeah.
And then go with that.
That's great. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take another break, and then, Sue, I'm going to come back. Can you stay with us another segment here for about 20 minutes without fouling up your... Okay. I this is one of those weeks where I want the show to go for like 2.5 hours, but we're going to cut it off.
I can join you again. This will be fun.
I know. We're gonna have to have you back. This is so much fun. I'm just gonna kind of prep you for the first time here. A couple other things I just want to talk about real quick. I want to know who you think the best woman golfer is out there today. And I want to know why Scottie Scheffler is so darn good, just from your opinion. And then I want you to just give a few general tips to the hackers out there, the people that are coming for lessons and whatever, just a few tips for the average golfer that might help them keep it in the fairway or sink the putt a little bit more, just based on your experience. Does that sound good?
I got it.
And there's like a million more things I'd love to talk to you about, but we'll go with those three. So we're listening to Sue Nias, pro golfer. She's got, and I'm going to ask you one last question, not now, but come back about, I think you've accomplished something in your career with the tournaments you've played in that stands out in my mind as very unique, and we'll get back to that in a minute, too. But we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Junk Refund Show. We're talking all things golf, and we'll be back here in about a minute.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show. This is your host, Alan Cook. I am coming to you live from the Costco parking lot in Fairfax, Virginia, where I'm talking to my friend Sue Nias, former collegiate golf coach, pro golf player, teacher, instructor, all-around great person. Let's go kind of reverse order, Sue, because I know when I asked you to send me some photos that I could post to tell people you're on the show, one of the first photos you sent me was of yourself, but then you sent me a photo with some grandkids. And when
I called your phone and left you a message,
you said something on your answering machine, but on your phone, that basically says, you know, this is Sue, unless you're one of my grandkids, then this is, and what did you say?
Baba.
I got you. Tell me where Baba comes from.
Baba comes from Czechoslovakia. My father's side of the family all immigrated from one teeny tiny village in Czechoslovakia. And so when my children were going to have children, I selected my grandma name as Baba so that I could honor my heritage.
What does that word mean? Does it mean something specifically in
Czech?
I think
it means grandmother.
I
think it's in
awesome.
Slovak, and I'm pretty sure it means grandmother.
That's awesome. Tell me how many kids you have and how many grandkids you have.
We have three daughters, Steve and I, and between them, we have five grandchildren.
What do you enjoy most about being a grandmother?
Oh, wow. Watching my children parent.
Cool. That's a great answer.
Yes,
that's
really
a great
fun.
Answer. I just had a little granddaughter born a month ago at month seven, because my oldest daughter is diabetic. So we knew this was going to be a high-risk pregnancy. The baby came early, a month early, is down in Utah Valley Hospital, has been in the intensive care for a month, born at 4 pounds, is now at like 5 pounds, 5.5 pounds. Everything's fine. Mom's fine. Okay. Baby's fine. And the baby's going to stay in there another month until first part of July. 3 or 4 weeks, something like that. And then they get to take her home. And it, like you just said, it has been so much fun to kind of look over my daughter's shoulder and my son-in-law's shoulder and just watch them be the parents. Because it takes me back to when I held that same daughter in my arms 36 years ago.
Yes.
Right? And that is a great feeling. Okay.
It's a joy that you can't really describe in words.
And I have two grandkids, and so I'm just kind of getting my feet wet here. A lot of my peers have more than I, and so I kind of feel like I'm kind of in the caboose here. getting my feet wet with what it's like to be a grandparent, but I have had so many people talk about how great it is, and I had a fabulous relationship with one of my grandfathers that I'm actually named after, and now all of a sudden I've got his same name, Grandpa Cook, and I'm not used to it. And so I'm kidding. Anyway, hats off to you for just the well-rounded way that you're going through life. And it's not all about, you know, hitting a tight list down the fairway. I mean, there's a lot more to life, and you're obviously excited about some of this stuff. All right, so yes. Back to golf. Tell me about the Women's Pro Tour. Who is the best woman golfer out there? Is it Nelly Korda? Is it somebody from Asia? Any thoughts on that?
You know, I like Nelly Korda. I think she's amazing. And she's tall and strong and so athletic. And coming from the athletic background that she grew up in with her dad coming off a professional tennis tour, I just think she's fun to watch for me.
And I saw her play in the KPMG tournament here in Potomac a few years ago, and that was a thrill to just go out and watch these ladies hit the ball so darn far and so well. It's the first tournament that I've been to on the women's tour, and I just thought it was great. And yes, she may in fact come from the most athletic family in the country and maybe in the world. I don't know, just the accolades and the accomplishments that her parents have and that her brother has and that her sister has.
Right.
I think
right.
All pro athletes. All right, speaking of pro athletes, Scottie Scheffler. Why is this guy so good?
Because he does the same thing every time. There's no variation. There's no manipulation. There's no crazy adjustments for this, that, or the other thing. He's very steady in his mental approach to the game. He's prepared. He knows where he wants to hit each shot for each hole location, for each condition on the course, and he goes about it in the very same way so he can repeat it.
And it's a lot of repetition. I guess you can get caught up in changing this, changing that, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And maybe that's a good thing, maybe it's not. I don't know. I think when Tiger Woods won the Masters by, what, 12 shots or something a number of years ago,
yes.
I think that was the time where as soon as he was done, he started to re-engineer his swing, if I remember right. He started to go
yes.
through some major swing changes, right?
And right. And there's a time for change, and there's a time for consistency, and just do what you do.
What
and
about
Scottie's
the idea,
in that time.
What about the idea of the team that you surround yourself with as a pro athlete? Necessary, I assume?
I didn't live in that world, and so I'm not super familiar with that. But I mean, it's always good, even no matter if you're a professional athlete, you're not to create your go-to team for things. You know, your go-to person for financial questions, your go-to person for medical questions, your go-to person for encouragement, your go-to person for this or that. So I just think it's good to have a go-to team, and I'm not sure exactly what more they have out there than what we all should have in our lives is a go-to team. Theirs might be a little more accessible is all.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. Tell me a couple of tips for people as a golf instructor giving lessons with all your experience. What are some of the mistakes people make or some of the myths that people believe in as a general rule that could help them with their golf game?
Okay, the first tip that I would give you is to aim your club first, then set your feet. If you do that, the relationship between your club and your body will be the same time after time. If you set your feet and then wiggle your club till you think it looks good, then you're going to have a different relationship between your club and your body every time, and you can't get better that way. So that goes from your putter, aim the putter first, to your driver, aim your driver first, and everything in between. So that's my first tip. Some of the myths.
Good tip.
Keep your head down, keep your left arm straight. Neither one are true. And then One other tip would be to have tempo, have rhythm to your swing. So some kind of thing back and through, one and two. If you want to get fancy, Amsterdam. Some kind of a rhythm to your swing so that you can keep it in the right timing. That allows everything to sequence correctly.
That's great. That's great advice. That's great advice. Tell me about Scottie Scheffler's feet. What's going on with his feet when he hits his drive and his feet are shuffling or moving? I've never seen anybody do that, but it doesn't seem... Maybe it helps with his shots. I don't know. Do you have any comments on that?
No, I think his feet are working to support the rotation that he creates with his torso. And that's just what his feet have to do. We all can't swing exactly alike. We all have individual idiosyncrasies and individual centers of balance and individual stiffer parts and more relaxed parts and more flexible parts. And so that's just what his body has to do to allow the rotation to be consistent.
That's a great answer. I'm just amazed. I've never seen anybody, you know, I've seen people rotate their hips and maybe rotate on their feet a little bit, but nobody kind of shuffles them like he does that I know of, and it just doesn't seem, I mean, it's maybe that's one of the keys to his success. I don't know. But the fact is we're just in an era where he is doing some stuff that is phenomenal.
Yes, but, I mean, that's not especially something that everyone would want to copy. It's just unique to his body.
Yes, that's a good point.
You wouldn't want to teach that because it's not what everybody's body does.
Right. That's part of being a great golf coach, I would think, is to adapt. Every student, client, is different, right?
Correct.
And your job as an instructor is to elevate their strengths and help them with their particular weaknesses, I would guess. Am I right?
Correct.
All right, so here's what I want to do. This has been so much fun talking to you. I have no notes here. I mean, I'm busy hauling junk around, right? And this has just been, this is so fun to just sit here and chat with you about this. I do have to ask, I'm going to ask you two more questions. One of them is, what else would you like to talk about that we haven't talked about so far? And we'll answer that one in a second. But the second question we'll answer first is, what do you admire most about my wonderful sister, Carolyn, who lives just a couple of blocks from you and who you've known for years?
Carolyn is amazing. I admire most that she continues to work on her passion of singing and shares her talent with our neighborhood and does it freely. And she is a very accomplished singer as well as a mathematician. And, I mean, some people would think that's her profession, but her avocation is singing. And I just have great admiration for her having the courage to get up and share her voice and what she's been training in her avocation.
Do you know if she's a soprano or an alto? I don't know that. I should know that as her brother, but I don't know.
I think she can sing all the parts.
Well, that's a good answer. I've never heard her sing a solo. I'm going to have to put that on my to-do list.
That's a to-do list, yes.
That's a to-do list item. Okay, and my other question that I asked you first, 3 minutes left, what else would you like to talk about from Steve to being a grandma to talking golf to talking life? If this was your radio show, what would you end it with given everything we've talked about so far?
I would encourage people to invest in and look into ways that they can play more golf with their family. And I think the way to do that is to start very close to the hole. For instance, if you've got young kids and grandma and grandpa are taking them out, or you've got a beginner person with you, start on the front edge of the green and get them to two putt before you get them to hit their driver. Get them to two putt, then you move 10 yards off the green, they chip it, and then two putt, and that gives them the smiley face sticker to move back to the 30-yard marker. They chip it and two putt. The 50-yard marker, they chip it and two putt, so they move back from the green instead of start at the tee box and hit, hurry up. That's no fun for anybody. So start at the green.
I played a corporate event one time that Gary Player hosted, and I asked him, how much time should I spend on my short game on the putting green and chipping compared to the driving range? And he said 4-1.
Yep.
And I went, okay, Gary would know. Gary would know.
There you go.
Good. What else? Any other tips you'd like to give us?
Just
that's a great
try
one that you just gave us.
This is the only sporting activity that you can play literally your entire life. From the time that you start walking until the time that they lay you down, you can play golf. And it can be modified for any limitation, whether it be an energy kind of limitation or a soreness or a replaced body part limitation or an amputated body part. There's even a blind national championship. So this is a sport for everyone. The golf ball is not a respecter of persons. And if you set the golf course up right for yourself, create your own personal par, it can be the way that you have growth mindset for the rest of your life.
And that's great for everybody. I mean, that's just great for everybody.
It is.
Last question. Here you go. If you knew for some reason that your time was limited and you got an all-expenses-paid trip for one last golf outing to go play 18 holes somewhere, anywhere in the world, paid for by somebody else, and you get to pick the course, where would you go?
Is the course limited such that you can play it?
Yes, you can play it because, if you want. They'll let you on. Special privilege, yes.
Because there's some places that are limited that I couldn't.
Take the limits off any course. It's a special privilege for you because it's going to be it's like your last meal. It's your last round of golf. They'll
right.
get you on wherever you want to play. Give me the course you would go play.
If the limits are as they are now, I'd go to Bandon Dunes. If there are no limits, I'd go to Augusta.
Where's Bandon Dunes?
Bandon Dunes is on the coast of Oregon, right on the water.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Good suggestion.
But you see, I can't get on at Augusta, so I'd have to go to Bandon Dunes.
Oh, hey, we've got somebody from Utah named Katie that wants to ask you a question. Go ahead. Katie, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
We are doing great. What would you like to ask Sue?
Well, I just heard her talking about her amazing family and the cute story that she has with her husband. I was just wondering if she has a favorite daughter or a favorite grandchild that she might be willing to share.
Oh, this sounds like a trick question.
Sounds like a setup to me, but I'm not. Hey, go ahead. You get to answer this
one. I have a favorite Tina, a favorite Kim, and a favorite Katie. Those are my daughters. And I have a favorite Porter and a favorite Mia and a favorite JJ and a favorite Brigham and a favorite little baby Steele. Those are my grandkids. And then I have three favorite sons-in-law. I've got my favorite Jeffrey, my favorite Tyler, and my favorite Jared. They're all my favorites.
Hey, Katie, I'm gonna keep this simple. I'm from Orem originally. I'm a Utah kid originally. I'm going to keep this simple. My answer to that question is Katie's my favorite. That's my answer.
I love that answer.
I love your question. That's great.
Well, thanks
way
for having me on the show.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
thanks
this is a Katie from Saratoga Springs.
I love Saratoga Springs. I was there recently. That's wonderful. Well, listen, that is really fun. I can't thank you enough for doing this. This has been just a joy to have you on the show. I'd love to have you back again because I love the sport. I love what you're doing, and I just love having you as a guest on and just talking to you about things both on and off the golf course. And I want you to go to your awesome husband, Steve, and just tell him, and this is a quote from me, he is a stud.
And okay, I'll tell
him. I love what you've told me about him and his persistence. I think that is exemplary for all men everywhere. Kudos to him.
Thank you so much, Alan. It's great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. Keep it in the fairway, which I'm sure you will. And, folks, this has been a great joy for me to come to you from the Costco parking lot in Fairfax, Virginia, where we're talking all things golf with my friend Sue Billick-Nias. And thank you, Sue, for taking the time to be on the show. We'll send you an audio of it. It'll be up on a podcast in 48 hours or less, and you can play with that audio all you want to, and we'd love to have you back sometime. So God bless you for all the good stuff you're doing. Really, it's been a joy to talk to you. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back next Thursday at 3 Eastern with a Junk Refund Show where we'll teach you how to get the junk out of your life, even on a golf course. This is Alan Cook, your host. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Junk Refund Show, the longest-running junk removal radio show on the air. Join us next week as we discuss innovative ways to declutter your home, your business, and your life using 20 years of junk removal experience. Find out why we give out free ice cream gift cards to our clients, too. In upcoming shows, we will explore how to get the junk out of your relationships, your spiritual life, your waistline, even your travel life. Plus, call in with questions and situations you would like some help with. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we are committed to bringing the next generation of junk removal, because not all junk is junk. See you next week on the Junk Refund Show, every Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on BBS Radio TV.